Today's guest is all about health and exercise and food. Stay with me here. He's participated in grueling sporting events of strength and endurance, and he's also eaten a 72-ounce steak in one sitting. Ted Spiker is his name, and trying to keep his weight down has been his focus off and on for years. His latest book is called Downsize, 12 Truths for Turning Pants-Splitting Frustration into Pants-Fitting Success. Ted Spiker is an associate professor of journalism at the University of Florida. He is a former writer and editor for Men's Health, co-author with Dr. Mehmet Oz of the You, the Owner's Manual series, and the author of additional publications on health, both in magazines and online. Ted Spiker, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much for having me.
So given the background we just gave you, not only know but write about how to stay in good shape, you've been doing a lot of this stuff yourself for a long time.
Yeah, and I think that that's, you know, part of the struggle for a lot of people is kind of figuring out, you know, what is best for you and what works best for you, because there's a lot of information out there and you can know a lot, but, you know, what my book tries to get across is kind of bridging that gap between what you know and how you can put that into action. I think that's the struggle for a lot of people, is they know what's good and they know what's right, but how do you make it work? And something, you know, I've struggled with all my life is kind of finding that balance between, yeah, I really love the nachos right now, but, you know, I also love exercise, and how do I get that optimum health and that shape that I'm looking for? And that's where the struggle is for a lot of people.
Well, the shape you start with is a significant issue right from the get-go in the book. What is your natural shape?
My natural shape is pear. So, you know, I had a doctor right early on, I think I was 14 or 15, who asked me if I got embarrassed at the beach because of my feminine hips and chest. And, you know, right then and there, it was kind of the signal that I wasn't built like a typical man. I store my weight in my hips, my butt, my thighs, rather than in my gut or my belly. And I think that kind of just points to what all of us struggle with. It's not necessarily that, you know, my body is different than other people. It's that we all have our hang-ups. At least people who struggle with this issue have their hang-ups. And it's kind of fighting those demons and figuring out how you can kind of get what you want without being unrealistic and without trying to go after perfection. Because I think that's really what hurts so many people, is this striving for perfection, when it's really not about perfection. It's about satisfaction. It's about good health. It's about being happy and enjoying what you're doing. And we have to kind of find those methods to get there.
You know, you're not the kind of guy, apparently, who finds pants that fit perfectly right off the rack. It sounds like it's been quite a while, but one of the most interesting vignettes is having a student write a critique of you that involved finding better fitting pants.
Yeah, I was scrolling through my, you know, I teach at the University of Florida, as you said, and I was scrolling through my course evaluations, and, you know, most times people are commenting about the class, and then there's a section on the course evaluation that says, you know, other comments, and somebody wrote in, stop wearing pants that are so baggy. Like, okay, maybe not totally appropriate for something to put in the course evaluation, but it was okay, because it kind of pointed to something that, you know, I've known, you know, my whole life, is like, how do you feel comfortable? And, you know, for me and my shape, it's hard to find pants that fit real well. So I tend to err on the side of maybe being a little bit bigger, so they sag a little bit in some places and don't fit, you know, real well. And
so if you want a comfortable, you know, fit around the hips, it's going to be a pretty baggy waist, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And of course, you know, certainly you can get it tailored and get it fitting right. But when you're misshapen, it's hard to find clothes that you feel comfortable in. And that's a lot of what this is about, is kind of just feeling comfortable and feeling good.
Which takes a trick, obviously. I mean, it's a lot of work especially among Americans, for accepting who they are and then accepting approaches that'll help them get to where they want to be. Now, what do you suppose was the flaw, Ted, in your approach to weight until you got to where you are in this book?
Well, I think my flaw was, it was, it's the flaw for so many of us. We fall prey to temptation. You know, there are so many temptations out there of foods that taste great in the immediacy. You know, they satisfy some kind of craving that we have, whether it's for sugar or for fat or for you know, crunching, and we have so much access to these foods that are inherently bad for us in large quantities. And, you know, we live in a society where that's so readily accessible. We're not as active as we used to be in kind of historical eras, and you put that combination together and it's tough for a lot of people. And for me, it was all about quantity. Like, you know, my you know, my persona as I was growing up and as I was in college was, man, this guy can eat a lot and he can eat fast. You know, my nickname in college was Hoover because I ate so quickly. So that kind of became part of who I was and part of my identity. So there really was no ramifications for eating because it was part of what gave me identity in a lot of ways. You know, I wouldn't say that I was necessarily kind of, you know, I don't think I necessarily fit the obese stereotype in how I looked. I mean, I had my fat moments and I was bigger in some places, but I didn't have a, you know, big bulging belly. But so my identity was wrapped up in, man, give it to Ted. He'll eat it all. He'll finish the leftovers. Oh, man, you finished that plate before I even started mine. And so much of that was about the enjoyment of food. And food is very social, too. You know, we have some of our best moments with food. So, you know, I had a lot of flaws, but I think if you had to kind of, you know, put it into one wrapper, it was too often falling prey to temptation.
Well, and the interesting methods you've used, though, to get yourself into shape, and obviously what works for one person does not necessarily work for all, and you point this out as you point out that you flip tractor tires?
Yeah. I was working out with a trainer a couple years ago, and he had a bunch of tires in the in kind of the back of his building. And he said, oh, let's go out and do this. Because they, you know, they were training athletes at the time and, you know, like elite performing athletes. And it's a real popular method nowadays for kind of getting a total body workout. So I did it a couple times with him and just loved it. So I ended up picking up a few of my own, store them in the backyard. And what I do and have done over the past few years is kind of lead these weekly workouts with my friends, and we flip tires, have fun, and it's just a blast to do.
Sounds like a good time. We'll get more information about it coming up. Ted Spiker is our guest in the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Downsize, 12 Truths for Turning Pants-Splitting Frustration into Pants-Fitting Success. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Ted Spiker and your phone calls and emails in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Our guest today is Ted Spiker, Associate Professor of Journalism at the University of Florida, has written or co-written a lot of books about life and health and fitness, and is the author of Downsize, 12 Truths for Turning Pants-Splitting Frustration into Pants-Fitting Success. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions, comments, stories of your own struggles with weight control programs. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Well, Ted, we've already established that your natural shape is pear shape, but what did the doctor mean you probably have an extra gland?
I have no idea. That was his response because I, you know, when he asked that question, I said, no, I don't get embarrassed. And he said, well, you probably just have an extra gland. And, you know, I kind of, you know, laughed it off the time, and it doesn't really, really bother me. But I think it was his way of just saying, hey, it's not your fault. You know, this is your genetics. This is why you kind of have a pear-shaped. I think that's kind of what he meant to say. But further investigation did show that it was anatomically incorrect to be able to have an extra gland. I think it was probably his way of saying that your hormones kind of dictate, you know, the way, you know, your body shape and the way your body stores fat.
Your sense of humor certainly shines through in your writing. I wonder, though, how hard it's been over the years to write fitness articles and be large at the same time.
That's a great question because, you know, one of the titles of my chapters, I didn't actually use it, I don't think, but it was about being a hypocrite, and I spelled hypocrite, H-I-P-P-O.
Hypocrite.
You know, and in that, you know, it's different for a lot of the diet and weight loss industry today is led by trainers and doctors and nutritionists who kind of lead the you know, lead the voice and lead the messaging about what we need to do. So, you know, their lives are essentially locked down. They practice what they preach and they do it. You know, I'm coming from a more journalistic perspective, the reporting perspective where I'm gathering information and writing about it. So I'm not really preaching this is what you have to do and you should do it and you should do what I do. So I'm more kind of telling stories and reporting on the science. But you're right, because it has felt awkward at times that here I am writing about diet and health and fitness, and I've struggled just like so many other people. But in a way, what I hope comes through in the book, I hope comes through is that I'm in the same shoes as so many people. I've been through the ups and the downs, and I feel like I can relate to what people struggle with when it comes to motivation and when it comes to sustaining a program and when it comes to the challenges of trying to eat well and exercise. But yeah, I used to work at Men's Health, and you know, most of the editors there were in dynamite shape, and it was a little awkward. There were a couple of us who were kind of regular guys, but it was tough because of, for what you said, you know, you don't want to come off like you have every answer and you do everything right, you know, because I certainly have had my whole life full of flaws, and but I hope that's why this book is a little bit different, is because it kind of gets at something that I don't think a lot of kind of weight loss programs and diets get to, and that's kind of the psychology and kind of the soul of what it takes to find something that works for you.
So a lot certainly from your insides, from your head, but you want to understand the body as well. And tell us about this encounter with a retired anatomy professor who was in great shape.
Well, gosh, you know, I was going to this gym. We have a really good gym here in Gainesville, Florida, and I would go there. And we have all kinds of people who work out there. You have, you know, you have students, you have middle-aged folks, you have former Olympians and former NFL players, because we're here at the University of Florida, so a lot of, you know, really elite athletes come from Florida. So we have the span of all kinds of people. Some people who are in shape, some people get in shape. But gosh, this one guy, he, you know, at the time he looked probably mid-70s, and he just did not look like someone that we stereotypically think of being in their 70s and 80s. And because he was not only lean, but he had muscle mass, and not like crazy gross muscle mass. He just was toned and defined and strong. And I would see him, you know, lifting weights. I'd see him sprinting on the, you know, treadmill. And he was kind of what I wanted to look like. And here he was 30 some years older than I was. So finally, through a series of connections, I found out that, he was a retired anatomy professor here at Florida, and it made perfect sense. You know, here's a guy who teaches about the body, and his body was pretty much ideal when it comes to kind of the classic case of what a male body should look like and how it should act. So I interviewed him and talked to him a little bit about it, and he really had a really kind of, I don't want to say perfectionist approach, but he treated his body well. I mean, he ate right and he exercised well, and I saw him at the gym all the time. If I went in the mornings, he was there. If I went in the afternoons on certain days, he was there. So he knew what he was doing for sure.
Ted Spiker is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Downsize. So in finding out things about the body, and of course, this is the first section of the book called Upsize. It's followed by part two, Downsize, and part three, Your Best Size. Let's get some fair time to fat. It does serve some useful purposes in the body, you tell us. Like what?
Yeah, I mean, fat is important for a number of reasons. I mean, fat helps provide some energy to the brain. Certainly in certain times and certain climates, fat's used for warmth. You know, but I think the most beneficial part of fat from you know what I've studied and learned is that, you know, we need fat. We need fat for our cognitive function. I mean, that's why kind of when we talk about infant development, babies need fat. You know, babies need fat because that's what helps make our brains grow. And I think there's a kind of a misnomer about fat, because I think a lot of people equate fat in foods with fat on their body, and that's not the case. Dietary fat is different than the fat we store. The fat we store simply comes from eating too much of any kind of nutrients, whether it's carbs, proteins, fat, anything.
And is that just an evolutionary adaptation that we store the stuff that we don't use as fat so we can burn it off in times of famine?
Yeah, I mean, the way the story goes, or the way the scientists kind of look at this, is the reason why we stored fat, because our ancestors, when they had periods of long famine, they needed to be able to pull that fat for energy to be able to live and to be able to function. So in those cultures, when you would gorge on a, you know, you'd hunt the prey, you'd eat, you'd feast, and then you may go days, weeks without being able to have food, you need that fat to be able to give energy to your muscles, energy to your brain, energy to all your systems. So our body learned to keep some of that energy. Well, you know, we no longer, in our culture, we no longer go, days and weeks without food, but our bodies still store the excess so that we have it in case we need it. That's why that exercise equation is so important too. I mean, certainly we can't, you know, unless you're Michael Phelps, you're not burning all your food in exercise, but, you know, certainly what we burn in exercise is an important part of the equation as well.
Well, so it's not as simple as just the old, take a bike ride for a brownie, that sort of thing.
No, and I think that's also part of the misunderstanding too, is that, and this is a pitfall for a lot of people. It has been for me in the past. If I'm in a good exercise routine and exercising every day or every other day or whatever is regular and feeling good, you kind of justify that, oh man, I'm burning so many calories, I can eat what I want. When the reality is, I mean, even a good workout, you know, for an hour, maybe in that 500 to 600 calorie range, well, gosh, that's not even a fraction of what you eat during the day. And you can blow that 500, 600 calories in a snap, you know, with some of these foods that are being offered in certain places now.
Go ahead. To go to Golden Arches, just say
it. yeah, exactly. So we have to realize that no matter how much you exercise, food is the underlying key. I mean, you know, you can be as dedicated as you want to the gym or to whatever workout you have, but you have to have a strong eating approach to be able to kind of make it all work.
Ted Spiker, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is a professor of journalism, associate professor of journalism at the University of Florida, the author of a number of books or co-author of a number of books on health and fitness. His latest by himself is called Downsize, 12 Truths for Turning Pants-Splitting Frustration into Pants-Fitting Success. You can join the conversation on the Exchange, 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area, 800-838-3760, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, obviously, barriers to us being able to shed our fat completely because the body does like to store it. But you point out as well, Ted, that fat is a bit of a psychological barrier. Can you give us an example?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, it's finding that sweet spot between, I mean, certainly we have to have some, but I think it's a psychological barrier in that, you know, how do we want our bodies to function? How do we want our bodies to look? And as I talked about earlier, that kind of pursuit of perfection is unrealistic. So, you know, because our bodies need fat and because our bodies, you know, are not going to be perfect. I mean, unless it's our job to look perfect, our bodies are not going to be perfect. And I think that we have to kind of let go of the fact that, you know, perfection is the goal, and having some fat, and maybe it's just about kind of where it gets redistributed. Maybe it's just about kind of being satisfied with our size. But the psychology is so important to all of this because we all have barriers and we all have kind of things that we're hung up about, whether it's, you know, how we look or, you know, how we perform when we're running or whatever it might be. We have these barriers. And, you know, as I just said, like, food is the key. But really, the psychology is the key, because psychology is what determines whether we're going to eat the bad stuff or eat the good stuff.
So the adjustments are not just the behaviors in particular, but also to the overall attitudes that guide those behaviors.
I think so. And so much of it is about kind of that idea of temptation and being in this, what researchers call the hot state. You know, if you go to a buffet, are you going to just eat the grilled chicken off the buffet? No, because you're in this hot state of you're being hungry. So, oh, those mashed potatoes look good. The macaroni and cheese looks good. I'm going to have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. So what we have to do is put ourselves in a cold state where we can make good decisions. So, one, you're not going to the buffet. Two, maybe you're, you know, let's say your kid's soccer team is going out to the buffet to celebrate. So you really have no choice of where you go. You know, you have to have some kind of plan to be able to do that, whether it's, you know, always carrying a bag of nuts and a big jug of water to kind of take the hunger edge off so that when you get to the buffet, you're not so hungry and you're not so tempted. And that's acting more of in a cold state. So you're actually making decisions rather than letting emotional temptations kind of control what you do. And it's really tricky because it takes a little planning and it takes a little bit of, I don't want to say willpower, but it takes a little bit of thought, you know? I mean,
well, there's a level of awareness implied there that you don't generally carry around when it comes to food.
That's right. That's right. And I think people think that willpower, like this whole battle is about willpower and strength and can I be stronger than the cheese fries? Well, it's not that, because just by nature, our emotional systems are going to decision are logical systems. You know, so if we're making a decision based out of emotion, those emotions are going to win. So what we have to do is we have to take it out of the emotional aspect of it. And that's as just as you said, you have to have awareness of where the emotional hot buttons are going to be so you can now make a logical decision. And this goes back to what we talked about earlier. We all kind of know what to do. We know that like a four-story plate at a buffet is not good, right? You know, I mean, none of us think that that's good. So the question is, how do we allow our logical reasoning centers outmuscle our emotional centers?
Well, all right, okay, then explain the 72-ounce steak story. That one, I got to hear that one in particular.
Okay. So that basically, I was working at Men's Health at the time, and the editor of a certain section wanted to see what, they were doing a special section on meat, and they wanted to see what large quantities of meat would do to basically your health. So they wanted a couple of us to eat a large amount of meat, and they actually brought in a police officer to do a field sobriety test. They tested our blood numbers before and after, and, you know, we got on the scale and we did all these things. So essentially I had an eating contest with another editor at the magazine about, you know, to see how much meat we could eat, and then they wanted to kind of show what the effects were. So it was semi by choice. I mean, I certainly volunteered to do it, but, you know, it wasn't like I was out Friday night for a meal and I said, I'll give me the 72-ouncer there.
Well, all right. I was just trying to do the math here. So if a portion is supposed to be, of red meat is supposed to be 4 ounces, you had 18 portions.
Oh, don't say it like that. Yeah, it was a lot. But, you know, I made a big mistake. I think I could have eaten a little bit more. I made a big mistake. I ordered it with garlic on it, which I thought would be awesome. But after about 30 ounces of it, it was a little tough.
Oh, yikes. All right, so explain the concept of forbidden fruit. And when we're talking about foods here, I mean, as it relates to the body and our consumption of it.
Well, you know, I think when it comes to food, there are certain things that most people will agree on, foods that are good for us. So there are, you know, lean proteins, healthy fats, fruits and vegetables, of course. There are certainly camps when it comes to carbohydrates. There's a camp that says certainly whole grain carbohydrates are fine. There's another camp that says we don't need carbohydrates. So that's probably the one hot button in there. But the forbidden fruits are essentially, you know, foods and ingredients that most nutritional experts would say these are not foods that you want to have any significant amount of. And I think those foods, you know, they fall into the camp of, certainly it comes into the camp of sugars, added sugars to food, and trans fats would be probably the two biggest hot buttons, I would say. There's a camp that certainly would say saturated fats would be in that group, but there's another camp that would say saturated fats are okay. So, you know, I think saturated fats and kind of the whole grain carbs are kind of the murky areas right now when it comes to the research. But I think most people would argue that added sugars and trans fats are just things we do not want in our diet, and you want to limit them as much as possible. So the idea of forbidden fruits, I think, for many people is, you know, do you eliminate them entirely, or do you allow yourself a little bit to kind of keep you going? And that's, to me, that's really the tricky spot in this whole diet equation is, I think most of us feel like we could eat pretty well if we could just allow ourselves that piece of lasagna once a week, or if we could just have that cookie once or twice a week. And I think one of the reasons why some diets fail is that they think that they have to outlaw the forbidden fruits forever. And when they do that and they somehow succumb to the cake, then they say, forget it, the whole thing's off, I blew it, I'm just going to eat the whole cake. So a lot of popular diets, and I advocate this approach, is by establishing some kind of little cheat window for yourself, whether it's a day or a meal.
The guy, you mentioned an actor from the TV show Spartacus. He's got a really interesting procedure here.
Yeah. So I interviewed him for a story that I was doing, and he basically, he didn't have a cheat meal or a cheat day. It was like a cheat window of a couple hours. So within a two-hour time slot, this is Liam McIntyre, who played the lead in the Spartacus series on TV. He had a cheat window, so he could eat with everyone within those 2 hours. So, you know, maybe he'd have pizza at the beginning of those 2 hours and then have, you know, cupcakes and stuff because his girlfriend was a big baker at the time at the end of those 2 hours. And that was it. That was his window. Everything else was as clean and as perfect as possible. So that gave him a little carrot, you know, to say, listen, I'm going to be locked down for 6.5 or more than that, you know, 6 7/8 of the day, of the week, and I'm just going to give myself a little bit of a reward at the in a certain window. And what he found was you know, he basically got sick when he did that, and he didn't like those foods anymore. So you can almost retrain yourself to not like them. But I like that approach because it allows you some wiggle room. And when I think when diets don't give you any wiggle room, that's a recipe for failure. Like, I think all of us by nature, we find comfort, or we just enjoy it, or there's a social event that we want to partake in something that's just not quite right. And that window just helps so much psychologically, I think.
And this is the if-then method, where if certain circumstances exist, then it's okay to get your little prize?
Well, if-then actually works more for temptation. So that's about having like an emergency plan. So that's about just kind of creating these statements that allow you to make good decisions. If I'm going to a party, then I'm going to drink a gallon of water before I go hand. Things like that.
Okay. Ted Spiker will come back and talk more about his book, Downsize, 12 Truths for Turning Pants-Splitting Frustration into Pants-Fitting Success. Much more to talk about here. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll take your phone calls and emails for Ted Spiker when we return in a minute 30. It's the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Our guest today is Ted Spiker, Associate Professor of Journalism at the University of Florida, former editor for Men's Health magazine, co-author with Dr. Mehmet Oz of the You, the Owner's Manual series. His latest book, written solo, is Downsize, 12 Truths for Turning Pants-Splitting Frustration into Pants-Fitting Success. He details his own struggles over the years to deal with his own inherent pear shape, and then trying to make the best of what he's got there. Join us on the exchange with questions, comments, observations, diet methods of your own. 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. 800-838-3760, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. I get the sense when I read about not just your issues and the things you suggest in approaches to weight loss, but that in a lot of diets, it seems like the issue is, like Atkins, for example, you end up eating a lot of things you wouldn't normally eat. You end up eating these things that are kind of alien to you. You feel like you've been deposited in a strange land.
Yeah, and that really points to a great point. And this is what I tried to convey, I think, is that you have to find what works for you, and that's not sexy. That's not a, you know, that's not a plan. You know, here are the three foods that you're going to eat and you're going to lose weight. But it's reality. There's no doubt in my mind that there are dozens and dozens of diets that will work. You could go to the bookstore, find a diet book, and it will work. That's not the question. The question is, can you stick to it? So if you're eating these foods that you don't like, if you do Atkins and you do not like meats and cheeses, how are you going to sustain that, you know? Or even if the only meat you like is chicken, you know, how are you going to sustain only eating chicken, you know? So how do you find something that works for you? So I think that, you know, we live in this kind of society where we want people to tell us what to do, right, when it comes to this. Here, if you just follow this method, it's going to work. But I think the real key to success is you've got to do a little research. You've got to do a little snooping around. You've got to kind of cobble together a bit of this diet, a bit of that diet, and figure out how it works in your lifestyle, how it works with your personality, how it works with your family life, how it works with your work life. You know, are you going to be cooking a lot? Do you have to go out a lot for your job? I mean, what is it? How does it all work for you? And when you take control of that and put together a plan that doesn't feel like work and it doesn't feel like it's punishment, then that's when it works. You know, you have to find foods that you like. You have to find recipes to enhance the foods that you like. And you have to make kind of the food that you eat fun and enjoyable, because that's what we're up against, right? We're up against the million-calorie, you know, plate of fried appetizers, which taste good, but they're terrible, you know? So it's you have to find these. You have to cobble together your own plan, I think. I mean, if it works for you to follow a plan, great. But over long term, taking kind of the best parts of a lot of different diets and putting them together may be the best way to do it.
Well, and as you point out, you need to be able to stick to it, too, because this is not something you're going to do. And as you point out in the book, there's no finish line. It's not like you're done. Okay, great. I can go back to doing exactly what I was doing before and expect a different result.
Yeah, and that's a great point, is that I think a lot of us think, oh, if I can just lose 40 pounds, then I'm going to be good. And now I'm going to go back to having my meatball sandwiches. And then that increases to more meatball sandwiches and more, and then you're back to where you started. So I hate to say the cliche, it's a lifestyle decision, it's a lifestyle, because I think it's just about living, you know. It's about just finding, you know, what you like to eat, and it's about finding the methods and ways to do it. You know, I've been a kind of a proponent of this idea of eating called intermittent fasting, but it doesn't work for everybody. I mean, it's basically a concept that says you eat within an 8-hour window every day. So you could skip breakfast, or you could skip dinner, or you could eat between noon and 8 every day, and that's all your food that you're going to have. And that works for some people. But some people couldn't do that. There's no way my wife could do that, because she would get a headache for not, you know, if she didn't eat, you know, throughout the day. So it's finding what works for you. But still, with that baseline, is the baseline has got to be good food. You know, I mean, that's the baseline. It's just kind of figuring how you work it into your own life that makes it work.
We have some calls for you. Here's Peter in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ted Spiker, the author of Downsize.
Hey, thanks for another good show.
Thank you.
Well, let's see. Just off the top, unfortunately, I haven't heard most of the show, but I think when it comes to food and quote-unquote dieting, I always remind my tween and younger girls about the idea that if we focus on trying to eat primarily a plant-based diet, and that doesn't mean not eating everything else, but just to try to focus on that, you're not going to be playing games with weight and everything. And beyond that, I just wanted to ask, I don't know if you've talked about this or not, but I've recently read something about, I think it's called a ketosis diet. Maybe before I say any more, I'll ask if you've heard of that or not.
Well, I think that's the, you know, and I should preface, and obviously, you know, we know this, that I'm not a doctor and should not be given, you know, medical advice for sure.
Yeah.
But certainly, I think that idea of ketosis is something that's really what has been popular with the protein-based diet.
Atkins, for example.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people do believe that there's some value to kind of putting yourself in that state.
Yeah. My understanding of it is that the basis for it is that it's really aimed at reliably burning fat more efficiently rather than depending on carbos, mm-hmm. to constantly be eating carbohydrates to fuel us to go beyond the wall, sort of,
right,
instead of hitting the wall. Is that your understanding of
yeah,
it?
Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of there's a lot of debate, and there's a lot of questions about the role of carbohydrates, you know, because so often we used to hear, you know, oh, we got a carbo load for energy. But our body uses energy. I mean, carbohydrates our body uses for immediate energy when we need it immediately. That's why some people will use carbohydrates for a quick jolt. But there is some question, I think, and I talked to some of these researchers in the book who kind of think we should be questioning what that role is. But to your first point, Peter, I think that really is the heart of it. If we can make half of our plates vegetables, you know, fruits and vegetables, that's half the battle, you know. But we're kind of in this era where it's hard to do that. You know, you can't drive through for a quick meal and say, give me a large side of steamed broccoli. I mean, it just is not accessible right now. But you're exactly right. If we could get to that point where half the plate is fruits, vegetables, mostly vegetables, that's it. You're right.
Peter, thanks for that. We'll take another call here from, boy, the button's really hard to push today. There's Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ted Spiker, the author of Downsize.
Happy New Year. Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Hi, Julie.
Just wanted to mention that cooking, learning how to cook, is a really great skill to acquire, because just learning from simple recipes and building from there, you can learn to recreate your favorite foods in a less damaging way using different ingredients and cooking methods. And also, you can learn to really satiate your cravings with what your body really needs and wants. Like, for example, I make a garlic salad dressing. You're not going to get that in these fast food restaurants, or for that matter, almost all restaurants anymore. There's so many additives and fake foods that it really distorts our body's system to actually eat correctly. So I recommend that, and I wondered if you had a chapter or a next book about that.
All right. Thanks, Julie.
But that is awesome, because that's an awesome point about, and what that is not about food. I mean, that is about food, but it's also about taking control and taking control of what we put in our bodies. And I think you're exactly right. If we take control about how we make them and how we prepare them, you don't need all that junk. And what you're, I think, talking about is kind of not just the main ingredients, but using spice and using herbs and spices to create these flavors that kind of satisfy these cravings. So, you know, for people who like hot food especially, that hot food can do wonders for, like, wow, I am satisfied, you know, kind of in that emotional way that we enjoy food, so that we don't need all those trans fats and all those sugars. And I don't have plans for a next book coming up, but I do have one of the chapters in this book deals with nutrition kind of holistically and touches a little bit on that. But that's a great point, Julie, because it's, you know, that really is the key. I mean, if you try to eat healthy eating out all the time, it is really, really hard.
Really. Let's go to Pam and Dexter. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ted Spiker. Downsize is his book.
Hi. Well, I have a friend who went on the Atkins diet, and he basically ate bacon and meat and all kinds of meat all day long, and cheese and that. And he did. He lost weight. But he ended up getting prostate cancer and leukemia, and he died. And I'm not saying the one is exactly connected to the other, but he always had issues with eating junk food, lots of sugar, and he got on the Atkins diet, probably lost 20, 30 pounds, and was really happy, and within a year he was dead. So there is a lot. To me, it's all about balance. And I used to jog every day for about 15 years, and pretty much a vegetarian, almost vegan. And then I got plantar fasciitis in my feet, so I couldn't jog. So, you know, I basically exercise every day, but don't, you know, do as intense of a workout. And I started eating cheese and dairy products and not really much meat. I never really ate much meat, but I do eat a couple eggs from our hens and a little bit of salmon. But I've gotten off of cheese again, and I just do low-fat dairy or non-fat dairy, organic, but not very much. And I my big philosophy is, instead of eating the potato chip, eat the potato, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you eat whole foods and if you have a little bite of sugar, you're going to want more. So I just stay away from sugar entirely and use stevia for my sweetener. And I don't have a weight issue, and I gain weight pretty easy. And I think when you eat the whole foods in a balanced diet, you're naturally going to be slimmer. And when you get on diets, it's more like a temporary thing. And we really need to think about health and whole foods. And if you stick with that, I think it's pretty easy, you know.
A long-term thing. Thanks for that, Pam.
And I'll listen on the radio. Thanks.
Take care.
Yeah, that was very well said, because I think Pam's exactly right. You know, whole foods, I think, certainly would trump our processed foods. Yeah, she makes a lot of great points there. And the other thing I like what she said was stevia. I use that now in my coffee. It's a natural sweetener, but doesn't have all the junk associated with it in terms of excess sugar.
Well, you know, I noticed that, you know, obviously the sugary sodas are given as an issue for a lot of people in this country when we talk about obesity. But you gave up Diet Cola. Why?
I don't know. You know, I just was addicted to it. I mean, I probably went 20 years and I drank so much of it. I mean, I wouldn't be exaggerating if I said I drank probably between a half gallon and a gallon a day. And I think I was inspired by some research that had come out that said, wow, diet sodas are linked to obesity. You know, the theory being that it was the chemicals involved tricked our brains to actually thinking we needed more sweets, so it actually kind of had this kind of domino effect to actually making us eat more. And I'm not saying that Diet Coke was the diet soda was the cause of you know, me having extra weight. I'm not saying that at all, but I just felt like I needed to clean up a little bit. And I felt like if I just would allow myself, you know, even one diet soda a weekend, I would fall back in the trap. And it's the only thing I've ever given up, like, wholeheartedly. Like, everything else I will allow myself little pieces here and there, but diet soda is the only thing I just, you know, some 4 years ago I said, that's it, I'm not having any more. And I've had a few accidental sips of drinking my wife's, but
accidental.
We had our cups on the same thing, and I took from hers. So, so I think I've maybe had two or three sips in those 4 years. But I just gave it up because I wanted to kind of feel a little bit cleaner.
Ultimately, Ted, what it seems to come down to is focusing on process, not so much the goals. And is that metaphorically like watching your feet on a long walk?
That's exactly it. And we get so wrapped up in our goals. I got to lose 25 pounds. I got to lose 30 pounds. When the reality is, if we just take the steps and say, hey, I'm going to win the day. I'm going to have a good day today. I'm going to eat a good breakfast. I'm going to eat a good lunch. I'm going to have, you know, a salad with some meat and some vegetables on it. And I'm going to, you know, I'm going to get my walk in, or I'm going to get my workout in, and just win the day. Then you're going to win the next 3 months. You know, I can't tell you whether it's going to be 8 pounds or 20 pounds or 2 pounds. And it doesn't need to be about that. It needs to be this process of, you know, you just win each day, you win each week. Eventually it's going to work for you. And trying to take our focus away from that end number on the scale. And what Pam said was right, you know, focus on health. And if you focus on feeling good and eating the foods that give you energy and doing the exercises that give you energy and make you happy and you're enjoying the journey, that's what it's about, taking those steps. Exactly.
The book is called Downsize, 12 Truths for Turning Pants-Splitting Frustration into Pants-Fitting Success. Ted Spiker wrote it. He's been our guest. Ted, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
All right, take care. This, folks, is Charlotte Duran's last day at the controls. Every time you say good show, you're talking about the work that Charlotte has been doing for 2 years now. She's leaving us in stages, physically saying goodbye as this year ends. Please join me in thanking and congratulating Charlotte as she embarks on the next phase of her career. Charlotte, thanks really so much. And that'll do it for today's Jefferson Exchange. One more coming up live before this year is out. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.